This is Business Rockstars. I'm Brittany Lehman, and my guest today is Jonathan Kashani, founder and CEO of Leaner Creamer. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
So for those who are not familiar with you, give me some background on your entrepreneurial journey and what led you to start Leaner Creamer.
So I actually came up with Leaner Creamer during my first desk job. I was a file clerk for a law firm, and I noticed everybody would, first thing they would do is they would run to the coffee machine and dump a little bit of coffee in a cup full of coffee creamer.
Yeah.
And it was just like they'd go back to their desk and just complain about gaining weight, or like I would see them snacking on like, you know, like Chips Ahoy or something like that.
Right.
And then like I looked at the back of the ingredient panel, I just saw the first thing was sugar and mm-hmm. like all these bad ingredients for you. And so fast forward to like 2014, I met my now wife, and she was this super health freak, like yoga instructor, like would make me eat kale and quinoa, and like she offered me Coffee Mate with my coffee. I'm like, wait, you're supposed to be healthy. Why are you drinking this stuff?
Yeah.
And so that kind of like kicked me in the butt to like come up with something new. And that's where we're at with Leaner Creamer.
And how many years did it take you to actually start Leaner Creamer once you kind of had the idea?
It took about a year to get, like 6 months to a year to like get everything, like the idea, the LLC set up, and then mm-hmm. just, we started sales February of 2015 online and just caught like fire.
And you're also an attorney, so how did that help you, or did that help you, I'm sure it did, start Leaner Creamer?
Yeah, I'm actually still a full-time civil litigation lawyer, too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it helped me because, like, having that legal research background, first of all, I had a pre-med background from UCLA.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, after law school or during law school, I just had this, like, research thing that they I don't know what they do, but they put that in you. And this, like, bug where you just constantly want to research and see what works with what. And you know, I had the help of a couple of food scientists, and my dad's a physician, and my brother's also a physician. So just synergizing all that research together, like, helped me, like, get to where we are.
And so you kept your day job, and you still have your day job.
I love my day job. I love both day jobs, but it's something, you know, especially as you're growing, you need to have enough capital. We're self-funded to date, so we want to keep it like that as much
as possible. Which is so impressive.
Yeah.
Do you have any tips for entrepreneurs who are looking to not raise outside rounds of funding and just kind of keep it in-house?
You have to have money. It's really difficult. Mm-hmm. Like, luckily, I was blessed with, like, a pretty successful law firm, and it's still thriving. And it's one of those things where if you're not, then you I know a lot of people do this whole friends and family thing, which, mm-hmm. you know, I haven't been there yet. But I think if you are going to do it, you got to grassroots it then, if that's the case. If you just, like, my wife came on early with me, and she helped me instead of, like, hiring a marketing team. Like, she was there to, like, help synergize and, like, build it together with me.
And what's it like working with your wife?
It's amazing.
Good.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, times where, like, I work with my wife and my sister even, actually. So we...
Family-owned business.
Yeah. So it's like you definitely have to have open ears, open heart. You may, like, sometimes, like, not agree on a couple things, but the long term is always the same, and that's amazing. And it's always good to have, like, who's better than your family to, like, be your pillar.
You know?
So especially my wife, and she's even here right now. It's just, she's always there for me for that emotional support, which is great.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And how did you get your initial first customer?
Oof.
Or do you even remember?
It was, honestly, I remember. It was, we had an Instagram account and a PayPal account. We didn't even have our website up yet.
Okay.
And just posting it on Instagram, like, I think within the couple days, we had, like, over, like, 100 orders.
Wow.
Because this was, like, a problem that nobody solved, you know?
Right.
It's just people have been drinking crappy coffee creamers for the past however many years.
Right.
And so when they saw something that's better for you, they just jumped on it.
And if you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice before you started Leaner Creamer, what would you tell yourself?
If I can go back and give my piece, I think I would. There's a lot of things where sometimes you learn to, like, give up control on. That's something that I've recently learned. Like, we've just hired an ops manager. You know, I used to think that I'm the best at everything, so I'm going to, like, try to control it as much as possible. But when you learn to just release the reins a little bit and start passing it off to people, like, I know, like, second year, I was doing the marketing myself. Still to this day, I'm still doing a lot of the marketing, but I wasn't, like, really doing it that well. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where, looking back, I wish I was on it more, like went into the details a little bit more, but you know, you live and you learn.
And as we were talking before, you're all self-funded, family-owned business. You started it as you kept your day job. So tell me a little bit about your journey, quickly, just for those who are tuning in.
So we started as a direct-to-consumer company. Like, first year, we went from, like, literally zero in sales to, like, 800,000 just in that first year, which is, like, unheard of in the food and beverage world. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we every year on year, we just grew and grew. And then the third year, you know, I met with some advisors who said, you know, like, you should try doing this in retail. And mm-hmm. I was very, like, anti-retail for a little bit. But, you know, the acquisition cost for people who know that stuff, it's a lot less when you're in a retail store like that. Especially, you know, you see something that's differentiated on the shelf. And so we started going to retail, and this past 3 months, 6 months has been like hella crazy. I've been traveling like every other week, like to like Austin, to Cincinnati, to New York, New Jersey, Florida. I was just on HSN about a couple months ago, which was
incredible. And so that was wild, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not really a camera guy, so it was like definitely interesting. And it's just, you know, people are tasting it, they love it, and you know, I'm trying to change the way people are drinking their coffee.
And you were telling me on the break that once some people switched, because before they were drinking the, you know, coffee creamer with chemicals and everything, people actually have shed up to like 20 pounds.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's a diet thing by any means. It's not a gimmick. It's just, it doesn't have all of the crap that normal, you know, coffee creamers have in it.
Exactly. Like if you look at those creamers, the first ingredient is either sugar or high mm-hmm. fructose corn syrup solids, which is, like, high fructose corn syrup solids makes you want to eat more.
Right.
That's like something that these companies put in to make you want to eat more, whereas with the coconut oil, it actually keeps you fuller longer. Mm-hmm. So.
And you're going in your first grocery store in a week or so.
We actually picked up Ralph's in California. We were in Gelson's for the past 8 months.
Okay.
And that's been growing. And then we're going to be in Ralph's in California starting next week. And then we got into all the Publix in Florida, which is like 1,200 stores.
Wow.
HEB in Texas. Sorry, there's so many. We're just starting to grow. It's on our Leaner Creamer store locator on our website too right now.
So what was that process like getting into grocery stores? Because I've heard it's actually pretty hard.
It is hard.
Yeah.
So like Publix, for example, never sees anybody. But, you know, my sister Jen, who's been like she's been my left hand throughout this past year, she just determined it. She would just hit them every week or every month, send samples to them until she knew. And obviously our Instagram account and mm-hmm. our social media marketing, like it worked together where these, you know, a lot of these buyers taste it and they say, you know what, we need something new in this category.
Right.
And so they're giving us a try. Even like some places have completely swapped out their coffee meat section, which is huge for
wow.
Leaner Creamer, which is awesome.
It's amazing. You're really revolutionizing the coffee creamer space.
Yeah.
And if you could give entrepreneurs who are just starting their business 3 pieces of advice, what would you tell them?
Stick to it. It's hard, but definitely stick to it. I think you need to have a balance of family. You know, like, I have a 2-year-old daughter who's like my life, and it's the hardest thing is like being away from her and my wife. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where you have to figure out a way, but you just balance it. You know, I've been traveling, like I said, for like the past 3 weeks, and like it causes so much anxiety and stress, as you can imagine.
Right.
And then, but like this past 4 days, I was just with her and my wife. It was just you're just refreshed. You know what I mean? The third thing is just be creative. You know, you have to come up with something different and new and, you know, just think outside the box. I know it's easier said than done, but, you know, just I think it's good to see some ideas and just look at your daily life and see what's screwed up and try to fix that.
That's great. Yeah. And Jonathan, where can people buy Leaner Creamer and learn more about you guys?
I definitely advise people to check out our website, leanercreamer.com.
Okay.
We're also big on amazon.com and just check our store locator. We're in a lot of retail chains. We've grown from, I think, 28 stores last year to close to like 5,000 stores this year. So
that's amazing.
We should be in a local grocery store next year.
Well, congratulations. Yeah. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
This is Business Rockstars. That was my wonderful guest, Jonathan Kashani, founder and CEO of Leaner Creamer.
Hi, this is Larry King, and this is Business Rockstars.
Vaping is a serious problem. One issue, flavored vapor products that help adult smokers switch, but may also appeal to youth. To address it, Juul Labs stopped the sale of non-tobacco and non-menthol-based flavored Juul pods to over 90,000 traditional retail stores. Learn more about Juul Labs' efforts to combat youth vaping at juul.com/youth-prevention. Juul Labs. For adult smokers only. Paid for by Juul Labs.
Have you heard what President Trump said recently?
Newsmax, you like Newsmax. I like it too. I like it too.
Now you can watch Newsmax TV and get the truth about Trump from Bill O'Reilly, Mike Reagan, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, and more. Newsmax TV is America's fastest growing cable news channel, now in 70 million homes. Find Newsmax on DirecTV, Dish, Xfinity, Spectrum, Optimum, Fios, UVerse, and more systems. See Newsmax TV today. It's real news for real people.
You should.
We're back, and we are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Pat O'Brien. This is Business Rockstars. Deontra Hughes is our guest, the founder of Spare. So let's talk about this. We're dealing in cash, and I think most people, when they want to get cash, by the way, welcome.
Well, back. Thank you. Thank you very much, Pat.
Dealing with cash, ATMs, like the thing, right?
Yeah. Well, it used to be.
Let's slow down. We'll get to it. But, you know, you decided to bypass that.
Of course.
How?
Well, that mobile phone of ours, it's attached to our hip. Right. And it only makes sense that what we're doing is logical. It's the only next step in the evolution. When you packed all those services into that little device that we have every day, why not bridge the gap between digital and physical? And that's what we're doing.
But aren't we doing it, like, for example, in a Starbucks, you do it?
Sure, but that's still, you know, that's in the payment of the goods. Mm-hmm. See, what we've done is we've applied that to the dispensing of cash. Mm-hmm. So we've said that the transaction.
Tell me how this works. What's one of your companies?
One of our merchants.
Yeah.
Yes. So one of the retailers. We have a great merchant in the Long Beach area. I think it's Paramount City, called Magic City. Mm-hmm. An individual by Gerald that runs this company.
And what's magic about it?
So he sells magic goods.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so that's his industry. And so somebody like myself, if I'm going down in that area, what I'll do is I'll open up my phone and I'll say, well, where's the nearest retailer that is willing to dispense $20 to me? And so our application is going to show you the merchants that are in that area. And then I'm going to send a request. So let's just say it's Gerald's shop. It's Magic City. And so I will send a request down to Magic City. I will walk in. I will be issued a one-time use barcode, a one-time use PIN. I'll walk and I'll authenticate with my device, with Gerald's iOS device. Once that authentication is complete, shown to be good to go, Gerald will give me the $20 and I will go on my way.
But you're dealing bigger figures now.
Oh, absolutely.
What's $20?
You can't,
even get a fake thumb for $20.
No, not at all. But at the end of the day, what we're looking at is we're eliminating time. At the end of the day, time is money.
Right.
And we've all wasted time going to the convenience store to buy the gum, the gummy bears or whatever it is, just so we can get cash back. And I believe that's an absurd way to do things today. When convenience should be at a snap of a finger, that's what we're giving you.
Now, what does this cost you or the merchant?
So the consumer—
What does the merchant have to pay you?
So the merchant is splitting the fee with us, or we're splitting the fee with the merchant.
What fee?
So as a consumer, so on that $20, I paid anywhere
between— Let's make it 100.
Let's make it $100. Yeah. Fair enough. So I pay $2.99 for that $100 transaction. Mm. The merchant is going to take a flat fee of $1.25 out of that. So that goes directly into the merchant's pocket for filling that transaction. And Spare takes on the rest and pays the processing and whatnot, but we house the rest of that fee.
So basically, you just lighten the workload to get money.
Yes. Yes.
Take Bitcoins?
At this particular point, we are doing the testing to convert Bitcoin to cash. Mm-hmm. And so we're very excited in the next few weeks. We're actually going to roll out to certain domestic areas the ability for our consumers in those zones to tap in to that Bitcoin. And we understand that there's less than 1,000 Bitcoin ATMs worldwide. And there's this desire, this necessity to be able to cash that out, to liquidate that Bitcoin.
How'd you talk these merchants into it?
Oh, well, that's the easy part.
Was?
It was. It really was. Because we understood what it was that they needed. See, in the past...
What did they need?
Well, they needed increased foot traffic. Okay. They needed increased revenue. And they needed something that was more secure than an ATM. See, in the past, those merchants went out and they invested in those ATMs. And
they
never
work anyways.
Right. But they did it with the purpose of achieving those three things, right? Additional foot traffic, additional revenue, and some kind of security around those kind of cash transactions. Mm-hmm. The unfortunate thing is the ATM industry has let them down. And so Spare has come in as that logical replacement.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs who may or may not need cash. All of you do. I'm Pat O'Brien. This is Business Rockstars. Deontra Hughes is our guest. What was the hardware that you had to get for this? I'm sure it's mostly software, but you know what I mean? What sort of schematic did you have to lay out for these people?
Well, the only requisite truly for a merchant, what they're required to have mm-hmm. inside of our system is they just need an iOS device, so whether it's an iPhone or an iPad, just some extra cash.
Right. By the way, iOS is that thing that you never download on your iPhone.
Yes.
And it has some benefits. I think you're up to iOS 10.
Yes, yeah. Yes, they are.
Was it hard explaining to these people, you're going to give cash to a stranger based on a barcode mm-hmm. that you're giving him?
Mm-hmm. Right. The hardest part, so...
Sounds like Grand Theft Audio.
Yeah.
Well, or audio.
As a startup, mm-hmm. as a business today, you have to ensure that merchants trust you, the retailers trust you.
Yeah.
And it's a partnership. And so, you know, we've had salespeople when they go out, they're trained to be very accommodating, very, very... they understand what the merchant's situation is. Mm-hmm. And so what that does is that creates this very authentic relationship. Every merchant in our system, retailer, agent in our system today has my contact information mm-hmm. because it's important.
How many do you have?
So we currently have over 700 merchants and we just acquired a deal to give us an additional 15,000 domestically.
Now, what does the business get out of it?
So we're.
By the way, I love this idea. I'm just.
Yes, no, thank you.
The asking business. Asking questions that they're.
Well, the greatest thing that we can bring to the merchants and our agents in the community is a connection factor. We're giving some small businesses like souvenir shops, the ability to connect with millennials. Why would a millennial need to go into a souvenir shop? They buy everything online. And so now, right. So now we're giving them the ability to connect with a demographic that may not otherwise come into their location. And so we've created this relationship between our customer base and our merchant base that's really self-supportive.
Mm. And you're growing too, right?
We are. We're growing.
So that's the testament that the idea is good, right?
Yes, absolutely. So we launched this application in August of 2016.
Is it an app?
It is an application, yes.
How do they find it?
So if you go to the App Store and you search Spare, S-P-A-R-E.
It says here GotSpare.
Yes, so the website is gotspare.com. Mm-hmm. But if you go into the Apple App Store and you search Spare, S-P-A-R-E, mm-hmm. We should be the number one result there, a nice big orange S, and that's us. Mm. Today, you can't take Apple Pay to an ATM. And so what we've done is we've given that millennial base of ours the ability to plug in digital wallets and have access to cash more frequently, a lot easier than before.
We gotta go, but what's the next step?
The next step is to take what we've done domestically and move it internationally. We understand that what we are doing is not just beneficial to one neighborhood or one subset of one state. It is the movement of cash is something that needs to be fluid across the globe. And that is what we're bringing. That is our value proposition.
And that was
people.
The beauty of ATM. It was a great way to get cash.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, for banks, if we look at banks, those small credit unions and whatnot, the ATM is usually the first way that a bank, a small community bank, gets into a neighborhood. Mm-hmm. They go and they drop an ATM and they go, okay, we're claiming some territory. But when you're a small bank, you don't have the assets to go out and pay for ATMs. So what do? You partner with us. Because what we're able to do is give you the ability to expand beyond your physical limitations quickly.
Okay. It's called Spare. You can go on the app's called Spare.
The app is called Spare, yes.
Website is Got Spare. He's Deontra Hughes.
Yes.
Nice job.
Pat, thank you so much.
Way to go. We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This has been Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. We'll see you next time.
This message is brought to you by Woot.com, an Amazon company. Holy crap, Woot.com is turning 15? That's right, the site that brings you ridiculously good deals on stuff you need and stuff you didn't know you needed is celebrating their 15th birthday with a week of amazing deals and shenanigans. Woot.com, that's Woot.com, offers deep discounts on electronics, computers, home, tools, sporting goods, and even unique made-to-order t-shirts. Kent Stewart, CEO.
In honor of our 15th birthday, Woot is offering deals the entire week. But the big celebration is on Friday, July 12th with an epic 15-hour Woot off with deals every 30 minutes, plus 15,000 of our famous bags of crap that offer a random collection of stuff for just $10.
And Wooters with Amazon Prime get free shipping by connecting their Amazon account to their Woot account. Visit Woot.com, that's Woot.com, or download the Woot app for your best chance to score the best deals ever.
Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Welcome to the show. Now let's check in with Alex Worley for good reason. She's always got somebody great. Alex?
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley. This is Business Rockstars. And my guests today, Andres Izquieta and Dee Murthy, they are the co-founders of 5-4 Club. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. So tell me, what is the 5-4 Club?
So 5-4 Club is a long journey. We started 15 years ago as an apparel brand and in the more traditional wholesale and retail business. And about 4 years ago, we pivoted into a men's subscription service where for $60 a month, you get 2 to 3 items at 5-4 delivered to your door. That includes shipping, and it's an easy way for guys to shop and enjoy style and kind of begin their style journey.
So this has been a long journey, been in business for 15 years. It's evolved a lot. How did you find that perseverance to just keep going and try new things and eventually have it work?
I think from day one, we had this mission to change the way that men dressed. And even though we had no idea how we were going to get there, we were just driven by the idea of creating something that was our own brand that reflected our lifestyle. And for the first 10 years of our business, we were a traditional wholesale and retail model, like Dee said. When we pivoted to this 5-4 Club concept in 2012, we thought that we finally saw the light where we were able to take all the pitfalls from the traditional clothing business and we're able to adapt to kind of like the new medium in terms of how consumers were actually shopping and how we felt that the customer wanted to be curated and where the customer was going essentially.
Yeah. And I'm sure it felt a little risky to do something that really hasn't been done before. It's so much easier to look at what's worked for other people and be like, oh, I'm just going to like copy that, you know, not reinvent the wheel. But you guys are in a sense reinventing the wheel. So how did you know that there was actually opportunity there?
I think for the first 10 years of our business, we'd always follow the traditional path. And I think we've listened to too many people where they were like, this is how you launch an apparel brand. This is how you get into stores. Finally, we woke up one day and said, hey, none of this is working for us. We got to find our own path. And ultimately, that's what led down to the club. And I think the fact that we kind of got out of the comfort zone of what everyone tells you to do and you do your own thing
is actually when we started seeing results.
Yeah, you were zigging where other people were zagging, and it came together and worked really well for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what did you learn from spending many years in the more traditional space of fashion?
I think from a foundation basis, we obviously learn the basics. We learn how to manufacture, we learn how to design, to merchandise, to market to somewhat to consumers. But more importantly, we learn like the backbone of how the traditional clothing business is ran, which is traditionally driven by design and manufacturing. From a perspective of like how that comes into what we do today, there's a lot of things that transfer, but there's a lot of things that don't. So I think, you know, we're able to transfer what's important, but at the same time, what was exciting is that we kind of started new. And I think it's okay to kind of like disrupt yourself. And it's okay to, you know, it's like when people die, there's new people that come in that are supposed to, whatever.
All evolving. Yeah.
It's all evolving,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally.
So for us, we saw that evolution. We weren't necessarily scared, and our attitude is always just do it. And we don't like to think too much about things and just do it. If it works, great. You keep evolving and iterating. If it doesn't work, cool. You learn from it and then you figure out what to do next.
Yeah, a lot of entrepreneurship is just trying new things and seeing what works and then going with that.
Yeah.
So going back to you said design and manufacturing are very important, whether or not you're doing the traditional model or you're being innovative. So what are a couple key components to being successful in those two areas, design and manufacturing?
I think that in design, just first is knowing what you want, right? So if there's an idea of how you can make something better, then great. Really understanding the manufacturing process helps you to design things better because you know what you can and cannot do. And, you know, obviously, like he said earlier, when people a lot of time try to tell you what to do or what direction to go in, you know, you have to take advice with like a grain of salt where you take things into consideration, but at the end of the day, you need to do what you want to do. And for us, you know, design and manufacturing has been kind of at the core of our business. And the way that we look at the future is that that is always going to be the core nucleus. But in terms of what's consumer facing, it's going to be about the experience. So from a design perspective, our thesis is how can we make things at the best quality possible and offer it to the consumer at the best price as well.
Yeah. All right. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, joined by Andres Izquieta and Dee Murthy. They are the co-founders of 5-4 Club. So you want to make quality products at a good price point. With that in mind, where did you start when it came to manufacturing?
So that's actually a really funny story because I think a lot of younger people can relate. Actually, you can't relate to how we found them, but we actually found our first manufacturer in the Yellow Pages.
Oh, wow.
So literally,
I remember those days.
So it was a big yellow book and you found people to do things. And we literally just found the biggest ad. They said screen printing in LA. And
that's, they must know what they're doing.
Yeah, they're the biggest ad. So, I mean, needless to say, that wasn't a pleasant experience. But I think what we did that was always strong is that we just got out there. We just asked questions and we went to China. We went to India. We went to all these countries.
So you actually met the people who were going to be making your
clothing. We were never afraid to go and talk to people and ask them to help us. And I think that's how we really started the manufacturing process. We started with that screen printer that led us to a sewer, that led us to a hat maker, that led us to a denim maker, that led us to a fabric mill. Like, you know, we just kind of...
Really kind of the old-fashioned way. Just a word of mouth and referrals and that kind of thing, which is still underrated today. Like, that is so important
there's so many
today.
Exactly. And there's so many businesses even today, like, they're making product, but they've never been to the factory. They don't understand the process. Like, we actually sat and learned every little process in the apparel business in the more traditional way. And I think that's what we appreciate, the whole process on a daily basis and what it takes to get great product to your customer.
Yeah. And you have a very distinct, recognizable brand. What is the messaging behind your brand that you're really trying to connect with your customer on?
Do you want to answer?
Whoever wants to.
Yeah. I think, you know, for us, it's really about driving this concept of discovery and being an explorer and being the modern man. To us, trying new things is kind of like an habitual thing. And to really have that kind of mindset where, like, the way that we see our customer, you know, our customer is a guy that is, you know, trying to find out what the cool new things are, what, you know, where the great places to go eat are. He uses Uber or Lyft. He goes on Postmates, goes on Amazon Prime, this, that, and the other.
Yeah, so you've really thought about your customer in detail. What, yeah, you know, what companies he...
Yeah, because if you think about the premise of 5-4 Club is that we send you basically two items that are a surprise in a box.
Yeah.
And you have to trust us that we're going to do the best job possible in curating that package and that experience for you. So with that in mind, the mindset, I think, is where things first start. And really that concept of wanting to be an explorer is kind of key front and center in that.
So your business has evolved a lot. Tell me about those key points where you were evolving and disrupting yourself and the industry and how you knew there was actually opportunity there.
I think the biggest pivotal moment was in 2008. It was like the beginning of the recession. And we got, in a week's time, I'm not going to name the retailers, but one returned $2 million of goods. Another one didn't pay their bills and another one went bankrupt.
Yikes.
When that happened, we were like, this business model is broken. Like, because you can't make money. There's no point in continuing on. So that, I think, was a way, like an aha moment where we were like, we're classic Americana, the modern version of it in our apparel kind of vision. And those brands that Macy's and Nordstrom's had carried, your Ralph Lauren's, your Tommy Hilfiger's, they were never going to make room for a brand like ours. So we had to go find a new distribution model so that we can grow our business to speak to the customer because those retailers weren't allowing us. So I think that really was the moment when we realized we had to change the way we thought about the world when it came to fashion.
Yeah. And for entrepreneurs that are new or aspiring watching this that may or may not be in the fashion industry, what advice do you have for paying attention to where there could be opportunity to disrupt the industry, but have it still be a calculated risk?
I think you just have to look at the market, look at products, see what product is out there. Look at your personal experience, see how you experience things. Your distribution platform of that product. Is it something that you buy offline? Is it something that you buy online? And I think more importantly is like, how do you talk to your customer when selling this product? Now with online and social and this, that, and the other, you're able to speak to your customer in a very different way than it was like 5-10 years
right.
ago. So there's so many cool new ideas or new ways to present certain options where before that didn't exist because technology was not there. When looking at things, being able to kind of see that. And then if it's a consumer product, like something that's tangible, really understanding how to make something is super important. Like go to the factory, sit there and watch, learn. Like you said, don't just sit behind a keyboard and see things. Like I've been in this business now for 15 years. And for instance, I was in Guatemala this week for denim and I learned something there. And I'd been to like, I don't know, 50 to 75 denim factories. But I learned something new.
Yeah.
So you always have to be able to adapt.
Oh, such good stuff. Guys, thank you so much for coming in. My guests, Andres Izquieta and Dee Murthy, they are the co-founders of 5-4 Club. And we are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.
Want to be among the elite on top of the mountain? Start adopting these traits and habits that the successful do differently. Hi folks, I'm Pat O'Brien with the Business Rockstars Minute. Number one, they surround themselves with supporters. They have friends and people in their inner circle that help them grow, get better, and achieve their biggest goals and dreams in life. The best of the best know how vitally important it is to surround themselves with a team of like-minded individuals who are going to help them win in all facets of life. Number two, they constantly expand their vision. Instead of letting their past mistakes, failures, and hardships define their destiny, they constantly expand their vision as to what's possible. They know that as long as they're still breathing and get the opportunity to live another day, there's more to do and achieve. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Nick Sobolewski. a select quote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I shopped the many highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $27 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 800-504-4747. That's 800-504-4747. 800-504-4747. Or go to SelectQuote.com. Since 1985, we shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
This is your Tech It Out Minute with Mark Saltzman, brought to you by ASUS.
So you've probably heard of those trendy DNA kits. They're affordable, easy to use, and they can open up a ton of information about you and your family history and your ancestry. We're joined on the line by Brad Argent. He's a global spokesperson for Ancestry.
So what Ancestry does, and I'm sure many of the listeners out there will be familiar with Ancestry as a family history company. We've been in the family history space since the mid-1980s. We are about helping people tell the story of themselves. What DNA does is ability for people to be able to find out something about themselves, stepping back through the generations, finding records, and sometimes, surprisingly, other stories.
All you do is provide a small saliva sample when that DNA kit comes in the mail. It's only $99 at AncestryDNA.com.
That was your Tech It Out Minute, brought to you by ASUS.
Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Welcome to the show. Let's check in with Mark Lack.
How do you know if getting a celebrity endorsement is the right move for your business and your brand? Joining us to answer that question is Lindsay Carnett. She's the CEO and president of Marketing Maven. It's a pleasure to have you on the show with us.
Thanks for having me.
So how do we know if it's the right move for our business?
I'll give you a buyer beware. So having a celebrity involved with your business can be a blessing, but it can also be a curse. So you have to determine, one, do you know your target audience? So if you know that you have a viable brand, you have a specific target audience, then and only then can you really determine which celebrities should I even invite to the table? And then how do you present your business well enough to make it interesting for them?
So a lot of the times what I see is a business and a brand that has a product, a service, and an offer that is in alignment with something a celebrity is in alignment with. For example, maybe a celebrity has had cancer or health problems.
Yep.
And a company has the product or the service that provides the solution
Correct.
To the cancer or the health problem. Then there's synergy there and it makes sense. And it doesn't seem like it's a cop out and a sellout on either part. But there's actually congruency and alignment there. So is something like that, like if you're a business, you have a product and a service, and there's a celebrity out there who's in alignment and is very congruent with the values, the beliefs, and the offer, that would be something that would make sense.
You have to know how to tap into the heartstrings of the celebrity, and it will help you sweeten your deal.
Exactly. Like if they've already gone through the problem, maybe your business was the one that did help them. Who knows? If you're at that level, right? Maybe you
exactly.
maybe you're the one that helped that person and then you could reach out to them. Maybe not. In a lot of cases, that's probably not going to be the situation. So let's say that I'm a small business, right? Maybe I'm doing anywhere between $1 million to $5 million or less. How would I know? Give us some contextual examples. Maybe you've helped people do this. Just like I'm a small business.
Sure.
I'm not a big company with a big budget. I'm a small business and I'm looking to maybe capitalize on leveraging influencers and celebrities?
Sure. So first of all, it's researching where are these people and what other deals do they have on the table. So one example is just, I mean, we have a nonprofit called WaterAid. WaterAid America, it's a huge organization. It's a global organization. And they're looking to align with celebrities that are from different parts of the world. So for example, they just built a whole facility in, they installed toilets. It's all for women's health. So they're looking for a woman of Colombian descent. So
okay.
Sofia Rivera would be a huge fit for them, but yeah. We first have to check what other nonprofits they're associated yeah. with. A lot of athletes, for example, will have their own foundation and it's, you know, they have their golf events and everything. So we first have to make sure nothing's conflicting and then go in with the ask. And a lot of times it's having that person experience your brand. Yeah. So we did a Norwegian design tour with Ty Pennington and it was not a formal endorsement by any means, but to have him embrace that culture really made a difference with how the level of interest that he had working with different companies.
So I love that you brought up research because I think that's the first thing you have to do is you have to research to see maybe they're already doing something with another nonprofit and it looks a little weird if somebody's supporting all of these nonprofits. Mm-hmm. So I love that you brought up the research part. How do we go about reaching out to them though? So let's say we've done our research. Mm-hmm. Now we found somebody that we think might be a fit or we have a couple candidates we want to reach out to. What's the best way to do that?
I know that all of the agents and all of the managers will hate me for saying this, but my most success has come from actually reaching out to that person directly.
To the celebrity.
So a lot of times you can't do that though. Yeah. So, but if there is some sort of in that you have to go to them directly,
yeah.
if it's something that speaks to them and pulls on their heartstrings, yeah. then it's probably not going to pull on the heartstrings of the agent. And not going to pull on the heartstrings of the manager because there's
like
no money involved.
Their job's like the attorney. It's to right. say no to everything.
Right, exactly. So you want to try and go as directly as possible. If it's okay. something that you know that you've researched really well, it will help this person emotionally somehow. And, yeah. and there is that connection.
Fantastic. So you got to get ultimately to them, ideally in the ideal world, and then leverage the emotional side again, based on research. So a lot of businesses out there, they may or may not be spending money on marketing, mm-hmm. but there's some very key important metrics and numbers to look at when you're getting into the marketing game. What are they?
Lifetime value of the customer and cost to acquire a customer.
Okay. So I'm a business owner. Mm-hmm. I'm either already spending money on my marketing, mm-hmm. or I'm just getting ready. Maybe a lot of my businesses come from word of mouth,
sure.
and I'm getting clients. I don't necessarily know where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. I'm a little nervous to start spending my money. You and I both help people,
yes.
help businesses with consulting, specifically on the areas of sales and marketing. Mm-hmm. I see people all the time. I go into their business, I'm gonna help them grow, generate more leads, and convert more leads. Mm-hmm. So first question is, what's your customer acquisition cost? And a lot of people don't know how to answer that. So why is that so important?
Because you need to know when you are spending your money, how to get a new customer into your funnel. And you need to know how much to spend. So basically, we marketing professionals like to back into the numbers and figure out, all right, what are your revenue goals? Yeah. How many people do you need to get in your funnel so that you figure out what is your cost per acquisition? So to acquire a new customer means a lot of different things for different companies. It means more if you're a continuity-based business, for example. But, you know,
because then you know the lifetime value, you can project that out.
Exactly. And you can figure out, you might be spending at a loss initially, but if the people are staying on your program for X number of months, it grows. So that's the whole value of...
Like, if you know your lifetime value, for example, to keep it super easy, if we were just going to say... It cost us mm-hmm. $20 mm-hmm. to acquire a customer.
Right.
But we know that customer in 90 days is worth $100 to us.
Right.
How much, right? Or if we just knew, forget the customer acquisition cost. If we knew the customer was worth $100 in 90 mm-hmm. days, how much could we spend to acquire them?
Right. You would want to spend probably 50, not
it
20.
Depends,
or
right?
You could yeah. spend, I mean, insurance companies are paying a huge amount of money per lead
yeah.
to acquire that customer because that customer, the lifetime value is so high.
Yeah.
So it's all relative based on what that lifetime value of that customer is.
Lindsay, thanks for coming
Great.
On the show.
Thanks.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We connect a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.